culture, and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day as the country is still reeling from the great crime, the great horror that befell our entire country in Uvalde, Texas. Small town of less than 20,000 people. A town that is estimated population 80% Latino. And the victims have not yet been identified, but it will be heartbreaking when they are. The 19 children are all second, third, and fourth graders, which is appalling. And people have reacted with every kind of emotion, but the most common emotion is the demand that something be done. And is that appropriate? Do I share that? Of course. And I do believe that we should have red flag laws, laws that would identify a crazed killer like Salvador Ramos before he commits his crimes. We were talking about how he was identified by several of his classmates as someone who would come into school with cuts all down his face, saying that he cut his face because it was fun. He posted videos on the Instagram where the cops were there, and he'd call his mom a B-word and say she wanted to kick him out. He'd be screaming and talking to his mom really, really aggressively, and he'd post it on Instagram. Ramos's neighbor, Ruben Flores, said he tried to be a kind of father figure to the troubled teen who had a pretty rough life with his mom. The Ruben Flores neighbor said he saw police frequently at the Hood Street home, where he witnessed blow-ups between the mother — that's not the grandmother he killed, that's the mother he was fighting with, who eventually left the family, left him with his grandmother. Flores and several other people familiar with the family said Ramos's mother was a heavy drug user, which contributed to the trouble at home, you think? Ramos moved to his grandmother's house across town a few months ago, according to Flores, who said he last saw the grandmother Sunday when she stopped by the mom's Hood Street property, which she also owned. He said she told him she was in the process of evicting Ramos's mother because of her drug issues. Meanwhile, new details have just been reported about Ramos's behavior at a local Wendy's, where he worked from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. 5 days a week. He had stopped going to school regularly. Adrian Mendez, the evening manager of the fast food joint, told CNN that he kept to himself. He felt like the quiet type, one who doesn't say much. He didn't really socialize with other employees. He just worked, got paid, and came in to get his check. A young woman who worked with him noticed an aggressive streak. He could be very rude towards the girls sometimes, and one of the cooks, threatening them by asking, "Do you know who I am? Do you realize who I am?" And he would also send inappropriate texts to the ladies. At the park, there'd be videos of him trying to fight people. He'd take boxing gloves around with him and asking people to fight. He was very quiet, didn't really have a lot of friends, so he kept to himself a lot of the time. Crystal Fouts, who was 17, remembered that Ramos could be aggressive for no reason, and he used to post videos online that showed him with guns and knives or boxing and training for fights. I would see TikTok videos all the time. They would be like, "I can fight anyone. None of you can touch me. I'm untouchable. I'm completely untouchable." While Ramos did exhibit eerie behavior, classmates say they were shocked to see him become murderous. Not only classmates. Kiana Baxter, one of his classmates at high school, like, "This still doesn't feel real. It feels like I'm in a dream. like till this entire day. The shooter's grandfather, Rolando Reyes, said he wasn't aware that his grandson had purchased two rifles at a gun shop in town. And while he agreed that Ramos was quiet, he didn't appear violent. The TikTok page has only a single post of a mobile game, yet the bio under his profile image reads, "Kids, be scared." IRL. IRL is an abbreviation for in real life. So his profile has a picture of him scowling, basically saying, "Kids, be scared," in real life. Just hours before the bloodbath, Ramos cryptically messaged a stranger, someone he had never met, someone in a different city, "I'm about to." The Instagram account with the username Salvator contained photos of guns and selfies. The account's a single grid post features three photos, a mirror selfie of Ramos in a sweatshirt, a grainy black and white close-up of his face, and a first-person shot of a person holding a firearm in his lap. The user, where he sent her a message that said, "I'm about to," that user said Ramos was a total stranger who tagged her in the gun photo and messaged her that, "I got a little secret." The Instagram user, who says she doesn't live in Texas, questioned why he tagged her with the pic of the rifles in the first place. She said she found it scary that he tagged her. "You gonna respect my gun pics," Salvador direct messaged the girl on May 12th. "What your guns got to do with me?" she replied on Friday. "Just wanted to tag you," he said back. Then at 5:43 a.m. in the morning, before 6 a.m. yesterday, the Ramos messaged her, "I'm about to." The girl asked, "About to what?" To which he replied, "I'll tell you before 11. He said he'd text her in an hour and urged her to respond. "I got a little secret I want to tell you," he messaged with a smiley face emoji covering his mouth. He never told the girl that little secret. His last message at 9:16 a.m., just before he went over and burst into the school, "I'm a air out." I'm not sure I know what that means. Look, this entire matter, the overwhelming public sentiment for more background checks, better background checks. I'm not sure I understand the implacable opposition to it. I thought we had an agreement on this between Senator Toomey, strong Republican conservative from Pennsylvania, pro-gun conservative, and from Joe Manchin, who's also got a high rating from the NRA and basically as a defender of the Second Amendment. They had together crafted what was supposed to be a compromise, workable way to institute background checks and to plug up some loopholes that may have existed in the background check system. And surely some kind of united national action or state action, even in Texas, I mean, should be able to keep guns away from deranged 18-year-olds on their birthday. Wouldn't you think? We will get to that and some of the political news as well coming up on The Medved Show, 1-800-955-1776.
More of Michael Medved in a moment. 1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. The Michael Medved Show, all across America.
It's an honor to talk to you because I think you got the best talk show in the United States.
Thank you. I agree.
This is The Michael Medved Show.
And on The Michael Medved Show, There is the tweet of the day, and it's a tweet that I think expresses sentiments that a lot of people will think are pretty spot on. But I'd like to at least raise some questions about them. Tweet of the day.
Now, to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
And the tweet of the day is from Representative Dean Phillips, who is a Democrat from Minnesota. He's been in Congress for, well, since 2018. So he's running for his third term. And Congressman Phillips tweets, "I'm a gun owner. Do not tell me our founders conceived of this carnage when they wrote the Constitution. Do not tell me they would have tolerated this madness. Do not tell me that teachers must be armed. And do not tell me your AR-15 is worth more than another 14 children's lives." Okay, it's very cleverly worded. It's very cleverly put together. And of course, no one would tell him. Our founders never conceived of this carnage, partially because they didn't have this kind of weapon. And if you actually look back at the founders of the weapons, the guns they used in the Revolutionary War, it's fairly complicated loading them. And certainly they didn't expect carnage at schools. And the ownership of guns by good people and by criminals was much lower, actually. Certainly in the cities, in the towns of the early America, than where we are now, where we have more guns than people. Okay, fair enough. But when people are defending the right to purchase, under limited circumstances, an AR-15, they're not saying that that AR-15 is worth more than another 14 dead children. And to equate everything with the notion that you are denigrating the importance of the entire issue, this is a way in which the left very traditionally goes over the top on the issues of guns. Now, do I think that restrictions on this kind of weapon are unthinkable, are impossible, or should be impossible? Of course not. And particularly, we should make firearm ownership for anybody at any age contingent upon some kind of indication of sanity and responsibility. And yes, that means that red flag laws, which already exist in 19 states, and at least the preliminary indication is that they seem to be working well, that should actually be extended across the country. It seems appropriate. Okay, speaking of being extended across the country, it was primary day yesterday, and the surprise wasn't that Brian Kemp, President Trump's least favorite governor, the governor that he was most concerned about driving from office, and he really was extremely harsh and very negative about Brian Kemp. Brian Kemp won big. And by the way, the numbers are just astonishing. He might have ended up in a runoff if he had gotten below 50%, less than a majority. Brian Kemp got 74%. David Perdue, the Trump-endorsed, very well-financed candidate, who, by the way, had basically given up. He had stopped running ads the last couple of weeks of the campaign. David Perdue got 22%. Okay, you can figure it out that it's more than 3-1 margin for David Perdue. But even more surprising was the Secretary of State's race. You remember Brad Raffensperger, who, solid Republican, very loyal party man, and Trump had persuaded Congressman Jody Heiss, who's also a good guy, who is a conservative, loyal GOPer. He had persuaded Jody Heiss to leave his congressional seat and to make a race to knock out the Secretary of State so that somebody who believes in Trump's stolen election scenario could actually change things in Georgia for the next time, for 2024. And a lot of people expected Heiss to win. It was certainly expected to be a very close race. It wasn't. Raffensperger got 52%. Heiss got 33%. He lost by 20 points. And I understand Trump has won. He won with J.D. Vance. He may end up winning with Dr. Oz. But he's lost the governorship of Nebraska. He lost the governorship in Idaho, where he strongly supported the lieutenant governor, Janice McGakin. And I think that one of the sort of assumptions that everybody has made, which is that Trump is a sure thing Republican nominee if he chooses to run, is much more questionable. Because if that were the case, then why would his candidates, and he had several of them, bomb so badly in the state of Georgia, which has to be one of the states that Trump would appeal to, having won the state? Yeah, he won with Herschel Walker, but Herschel Walker is going to have a tough race to actually win the Senate seat. And Herschel Walker has a popularity that transcends politics. Also in Arkansas, John Bozeman, who there was a feeling that he might have to face a runoff. He is still heavily favored, but he didn't. He won with more than 50%. He won the GOP nomination outright, as did Trump's ally and friend, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's going to be the next governor of Arkansas, almost surely. But John Bozeman was running against another former NFL player named Jake Bickett, who had a well-funded right-wing primary challenge. Senator Bozeman won and will almost surely win in November. For people who care about the Republican Party, encouraging results. We will be right back on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, talking about the Georgia primary, almost forgot to mention Stacey Abrams. What about Stacey Abrams? There's a great analysis by seems to me right on target, that appeared in Real Clear Politics. And it says, Abrams this week has a tough time explaining why voter turnout was soaring ahead of the Georgia primaries, including among black voters. Last Friday, Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, who just got re-elected, basically, because he's going to win in November, handily, I think, Raffensperger's office announced that more than 565,000 Georgians had voted early, a 153% increase from the same point in the early voting period in the 2018 primary, and a 189% increase from the 2020 primary election. We know that increased turnout has nothing to do with suppression, Abrams said at a press conference Tuesday. She says suppression is about whether or not you make it difficult for voters to access the ballot. Well, what if making it difficult for voters to access a ballot actually increases turnout because it challenges people to do it? This assertion spurred derision from the right, well deserved. Abrams, who was uncontested in the Democratic primary, must now try to prove that her voter suppression arguments still make sense. She'll also try to capitalize on her registration inroads to prove her surprise success in 2018 wasn't just a one-off, but has truly helped to turn the state blue. Well, not really. This was actually one of those things that should make Brian Kemp particularly happy. Another one was all credit to David Perdue. He ran an unnecessary race. He used inappropriate smears of Governor Kemp, trying to blame him for Trump's loss. But having lost himself and having lost by more than 3-1, gotten only 21% of the primary votes, he came out immediately on election night and gave a strong, no-holds-barred endorsement for Brian Kemp, saying how important it is that Georgia maintain a Republican governor and a Republican legislature. And that's something that can be appreciated. Some of the reactions to Uvalde are less admirable. There is an angry, sincere, public-spirited reaction from an unlikely source, the NBA coach for the Warriors. It's for the San Francisco, the NBA coach Steve Kerr spoke out, blaming 50 senators for what happened in Uvalde, not doing anything on gun legislation. He cites H.R. 8, which deals with background checks for private gun sales or private gun loans between people. Here is what the coach sounded like walking out over the need to do something. Clip 6.
When are we going to do something? Something. I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough. There's 50 senators right now who refuse to vote on H.R. 8, which is a background check rule that the House passed a couple years ago. It's been sitting there for 2 years. And there's a reason they won't vote on it, to hold on to power. So I ask you, Mitch McConnell, I ask all of you senators who refuse to do anything about the violence and school shootings and supermarket shootings, I ask you, are you going to put your own desire for power ahead of the lives of our children and our elderly and our churchgoers? Because that's what it looks like. It's what we do every week.
Okay, Steve Kerr is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, which do represent San Francisco, the northern part of the state, of the NBA. He's an 8-time NBA champion. He's won 5 titles as a player, as well as 3 with the Warriors as their head coach. He went on to say how angry he is once again. Listen.
50 senators in Washington are going to hold us hostage. Do you realize that 90% of Americans, regardless of political party, want background check, universal background check? 90% of us. We are being held hostage by 50 senators in Washington who refuse to even put it to a vote, despite what we, the American people, want. They won't vote on it because they want to hold on to their own power. It's pathetic. I've had enough.
Okay, first of all, they don't control the Senate right now. And putting the background checks to a vote, is that something where the NRA might surprise the world? And this, of course, would be a very strong political maneuver for President Trump. Would only do him benefit, not harm. If when he addresses the NRA and is scheduled, he's verified that he's going to be doing this speech this weekend, he came out and urged the organization to change its position and to actually work together on a bipartisan basis to increase and improve, uplift the background checks. It would be wildly popular across the country. A majority of NRA members, at least according to surveys, do believe that that would be a reasonable thing to do. And then maybe some of the hysteria could be reduced. Would it also provide some kind of a symbolic win for Joe Biden? He gave his speech on the school shooting in Texas last night after he got back from his trip to Japan and to Asia. And President Biden sounded like this. This is clip 14.
I had hoped when I became president I would not have to do this again. Another massacre. Uvalde, Texas. An elementary school. Beautiful, innocent, second, third, fourth graders. And how many scores of little children who witnessed what happened see their friends die as if they're on a battlefield, for God's sake. They'll live with it the rest of their lives.
And then he asked this about assault rifles. This is clip B.
What in God's name do you need assault weapons for except to kill someone? Deer aren't running through the forest with Kevlar vests on, for God's sake. It's just sick. And the gun manufacturers have spent two decades aggressively marketing assault weapons, which make them the most and largest profit. For God's sake, we have to have the courage to stand up to the industry. Here's what else I know. Most Americans support common sense laws, common sense gun laws.
Okay, and with that in mind, would it be out of the question for the NRA to respond back? Yes, common sense gun laws in which we can work together. And given the fact that, for instance, the NRA has actually made some real progress in terms of gun safety, which has to do with the decrease, and there has been a decrease, in gun accidents per owner. More progress in that direction might be appropriate, no? We will be right back on The Medved Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. All across America.
It's dangerous for America. It's dangerous for the world.
This is the Michael Medved Show.
A summary from the Georgia primary campaign, the bitter campaign for the Republican nomination for governor, won overwhelmingly by Governor Brian Kemp. What they basically point out is that there was another big winner who wasn't on the ballot last night. Vice President Mike Pence earned provided an endorsement fairly early on before the primary for Brian Kemp. And Kemp maintained his early lead in the polls while earning the endorsement of former Vice President Mike Pence along the way and cruising to an easy victory, as did Raffensperger. Pence, largely written off by media, looked more prescient, if not instantly relevant. In an appearance with Kemp on the eve of the election, Pence called a vote for Kemp a deafening message that the Republican Party is the party of the future. That stirred new headlines about a potential presidential run for the former vice president yesterday. Let us go to your calls and to David in Tacoma, Washington.
Hello, Michael.
Hey.
You know, I just disagree with many things you say, okay?
We're the same education, same age level. Well, I'm a Democrat and a Republican. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when it comes to some of the, you know, for example, the election last night, okay, you thought it was an encouraging sign. I look at it completely differently, okay, because there are so many Republicans in terms of what they think and what they believe are too extreme, okay? And let me give you an example of that. But by the way, the one thing that we do agree on, okay, is abortion, okay? I don't know anybody who thinks abortion is a good thing, okay? But where we emphasize it is different. You think it should be abolished? I think it should be the opinion of the person who is, is having problems, needs to maybe have an abortion.
Okay, let me ask you a question. David, you sound like a reasonable guy. Let me ask you a question. Do you believe there should be no restriction on abortion, that even when a lady is 8 months pregnant and it's not a medical emergency, but she's just changed her mind, that the baby there in utero is not to be considered?
No, I agree with you completely. I think that the laws as they are today, okay, where I think an abortion is okay up to a certain period of time. But I think that the number of abortions after, say, the first trimester are minimal.
It's 5%. You're right.
5%.
You're right. So in that case, why would you oppose something like the Mississippi law? The Mississippi law preserves access to abortion up to 15 weeks. After 15 weeks, no, only in case of medical emergency or rape or incest or some special need.
Well, the problem is in those states where the laws are going in, okay, that the abortion clinics, and there's so few as it is, okay, where does somebody go that needs to have an abortion, okay? And most of the time, again, it's, in that first trimester, that they are not going. They're going there for a specific reason. Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe they, whatever the reason might be. Okay? And I believe that the abortion laws that are coming into place now are so restrictive, okay, that you're going to go back.
Well, look, there are some of them. There are some of them that strike me as extremely unworkable, like the Oklahoma law, which considers. Provides protection, prevention of any abortion from the time of fertilization, they say. That's the term they use. And the question I would really ask you, and this gets to the very heart of this abortion argument, would be, do you really believe that the Constitution mandates that you're not allowed to restrict abortion at all in the first two trimesters?
Well, I don't think the Constitution has anything to do with it.
Well, it does, because that's the basis in which the Supreme Court made its decision with Roe v. Wade. That's why the decision is so outrageous. It isn't based on the Constitution. It's based upon the opinion of judges. And I think it's tremendously dangerous to, whether it's on the right or on the left, to have people go beyond what is stipulated in statute law or stipulated in the Constitution of the United States. Then you're just doing it based on what a majority of the justices, five justices, pull out of their rear end.
Michael, you and I are the same age group, okay? And my father was a doctor. And I'll never forget in the 60s, and when it was not legal, okay? When a patient of his, a 16-year-old, had to go down to Tijuana. The abortion was a disaster. She never had another child. Never saw my mother cry as much as she did. Okay? There are reasons why we had rules for an abortion. Okay? I don't know anyone, and I'm a Democrat. I don't know anybody that believes in abortions. Okay? I do believe, though, that it's not the government's. They shouldn't put their feet in there.
I am sure that if you and I sat down together, we would work out something we'd think would be the middle policy, which, by the way, is what the Chief Justice Warren Burger argued for in the case Roe v. Wade. If you actually read the case, it was not to be so extreme. The problem is we've gotten to this extreme level because the entire issue was seized by the courts. It should have been gone through with the legislatures. I don't think there's any question at all that, and by the way, and Justice Berger says in his concurring opinion in Roe v. Wade from 1973 that nothing in this opinion is meant to provide abortion on demand. And the idea that there are regulations, as there are in every European country, does the United States really have to have a more open abortion system than France or Sweden?
But is it today?
Yes, it is today. It is today. France and Sweden and all the countries in Europe have limitations after some of them after 12 weeks. All of them after 20 weeks. In other words, that you cannot have an abortion after 20 weeks. If you're going to need that abortion, like that 16-year-old, then she, under European laws, under laws in most countries around the world, they would enable, facilitate, allow abortions during the very early stages of pregnancy, which, it, by the way, and your father's a doctor, it's safer then too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so by every standard, trying to pull away from the complete, which, by the way, that's what the Democrats were pushing for in the Senate, where they didn't get the votes. It was abortion at any time up to the end of pregnancy. Hey, Dave, appreciate your call. Coming up, complete change of pace. Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Some 30 years ago, two intrepid chipmunk crime fighters delighted kids across the country on Disney Afternoon, and now they're back for new adventures, combining live action and computer graphics in Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, now streaming on Disney Plus.
Rescue Rangers!
You need a disguise or something.
I'm thinking reboot.
Nobody wants a reboot.
Well, cartoon fans may relish this quick, clever adaptation with literally dozens of references to classic animated films down through the years, including some characters from outside the Disney stable. The twisty film noir plot is difficult for viewers of any age to comprehend, and the animation and effects are also surprisingly pedestrian in a PG-rated romp that nonetheless delivers moments of entertainment and inventiveness. Two stars for Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. And coming up, of course, the big movie that the end of the week is Maverick, the Top Gun return to a flight 38 years later. We will be reviewing that coming up tomorrow. We will also be talking a little bit about the contradiction between hysteria concerning voter suppression based on new voting regulation laws that Republicans have passed. If there's so much voter suppression, then why is primary participation, even for Democrats, going up and up? We will talk about that and more about the aftermath of the horrible shooting in Uvalde and more in this